Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite video games. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
I am doing as well as one could possibly expect.
That's fair. But we wanted to make sure that we mention this at the top of the episode as well for folks that are listening to us. We are in the middle of a Patreon pledge drive. We've fallen pretty low, and honestly, we, for those that don't know, we are completely funded by Patreon supporters. Without them, without people actually donating to the Patreon, we wouldn't be able to make our content, wouldn't be able to have the site, wouldn't be able to do shows like this. So right now we're asking that if you enjoy our content, want to see us continue to grow, thrive, and basically stick around, consider donating to the Patreon, and it's over at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. We have different tiers of support, including ones that allow you to actually get us to like write backgrounds for your characters, which, you know, that's a cool thing. You want us to write for your D&D character or something like that? Go for it. We'll do it. We love doing stuff like that. If you are already donating to us, we appreciate it. We know that we've had several supporters since day one. If you can maybe up your support a little bit, it would also be appreciated. We just want to make sure we can keep the lights on. Anything you want to add to that, Matt?
Help us. We good.
We are good. And honestly, we've been trying to develop and cover more things aside from just Blizzard stuff. And the only way we can do that is with continued support. So if you
please, I want my Cyberpunk 2077 watch. Help me.
And if you've enjoyed stuff like Tavern Watch, where we've been covering more tabletop RPG stuff, you want us to see us continue to expand that, as well as the various articles on the site that are not just about Blizzard related games, feel free to, you know, let us know. Become a patron. Let us know exactly what you want. And as a way of continuing to say thank you, we are answering questions that were provided to us by our patrons, our patron supporters. Many of them did come from there. We were able to find quite a few. So I do want to thank you for that. And if you do have questions for the podcast, there are several different ways that you can get them to us. You can go ahead and send them in at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just make sure you specify which podcast it's for, as we do now have three of them. You can go ahead and give them to us on our Discord channels. We have one set aside for Patreon supporters, which is Patreon Q and podcast questions. And we do have one set aside just for, it's labeled Q questions, but we do also look there for podcast questions. You can go ahead and send it to us there. And again, specify for what show it's for. Without further ado, let's go ahead and get into some questions that you, our lovely listeners, have sent us. Hail to thee who art tasked to watch the lore. So I've been playing since Wrath, and it's only just occurred to me I have no idea who the pilgrims were that inspired the name of the festival Pilgrim's Bounty. I can see loads of guides for achievements and cooks, etc., but is there any lore about who the pilgrims were and what the purpose of their pilgrimage was, is to, etc.? If there isn't any official lore, what would be your headcanon? I realize it's an in-world Thanksgiving, but as I'm British and have no concept of such, I wonder about the Azerothian story. And this is from our friend Razorbug.
No, there is no lore. However, there could very easily be lore, because humans, the entire race of humans that dwells primarily in the Eastern Kingdoms, were in fact pilgrims. They came south from what, you know, the Northrend that was before the whole blowing up of the continent thing. They came south from there to where they are now on a pilgrimage alongside Tyr, Arcadis, and Irania.
Mm-hmm.
This pilgrimage established ultimately the various human kingdoms, including Lordaeron and Arathor. The peoples of those areas were descended from these pilgrims. So it would be that simple to make there be lore for Pilgrim's Bounty. It would literally take the time I just did, that boom, done. You could do it that fast. They have not done so.
And honestly, there is a entire section of like almost every race's lore where they are not in the cradle of their birth, right? Like they've all wandered from somewhere. Like,
well, Torin, absolutely. You know, Torin were incredibly nomadic for a very long time. They've been all over the place, absolutely.
Orcs are from an entirely different planet.
Yeah. Night Elves, I mean, you'd kind of argue it. I mean, because so much of the poor got blown up. So, yep. Yeah. And, you know, Blood Elves, clearly, they could, you know, the Blood Elves and High Elves sailed across the ocean to get to where they were. Dwarves can't call that. Dwarves woke up in a complex and then moved out and were like, okay, we live here now. Same for the gnomes. So those two don't really have a pilgrimage thing.
Well, technically the gnomes have been displaced. So
yeah, now they have. They didn't pilgrimize anywhere. Mecha gnomes kind of could say that.
But. The dark spear were shunted from their homes.
They were actually shunted from their homes twice.
Yep.
Because they used to live in the, you know, Stranglethorn in around the Gurubashi. The Gurubashi basically kicked them out, so they had to go live on an island. And then from that island, they then got kicked out again because they had to leave due to the crazy Naga Sea Witch. So they went all the way over to Kalimdor. So they've actually had a couple pilgrimages, you could argue.
Yeah, the point is there's a case that they could make it in-game justifiable lore-wise, which I think would be fun.
Especially but if you wanted to connect it to like the humans, because it seems very much a human
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to connect it to that, they've got a pilgrimage story. So yeah, you can do it real easy. And for all I know, maybe that is the intent. Just because they haven't released anything talking about it doesn't mean that wasn't the intent. They had a place named Tyr's Hand for years before they actually explained what Tyr was up, you know? So it's possible they are currently, that is what they're going with. I don't know. But as of right now, there's nothing in game that explains what Pilgrim's Bounty is about. As far as I can tell.
Yeah. I don't think they've really done anything in game with it, but like, it would be cool if they did. It's honestly one of the things that I've always wanted as far as like game lore goes in general, which is the holidays that are in game, generally speaking, are there to tend to give an in-game event to a real world holiday equivalent. But I would always wondered what it would be like if you could take those and tie them into something more like into the world. Like we have the entire winter festival or winter Vales feast, I think it is. Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But it's essentially analog for Christmas and Hanukkah. But give it some.
I like that you asked the question and I listened to you ask the question and then I sat here waiting for I don't know who to answer it. Like, who do I think is going to answer this question? That's like
Liz isn't on the show, Matt.
I don't know what's happening right now. I was like, the best part was, are you talking to me? Like, no, Matt, he's talking to Jim. Yes, he's talking to you. You're the only person here. Like, oh, okay.
It's been a very long week, folks. But I have always wondered, like, why not try to give it a little more tie into in-game lore, in-game events, especially now that they've been fleshing out the world, especially in recent years with the release of Chronicle, the Grimoire, and now everything else that they've been doing between the actual various book releases. And we've been learning more about like the culture of a lot of these races. Why not give it some more, I don't want to say fluff, but tie it in, tie some of those holiday events in. I think it'd be worth it.
It would be great to have Tyr suddenly just start showing up and going, Merry Pilgrim's Bounty. Here's a sword. What? Why are you doing this? Because your ancestors fled from the old gods and their horrible Cathraxi minions like that one. You know, I don't know.
Tyr, you can't give children swords. Sure, I can. They're educational.
I was like, in Azeroth, I think probably kids have them. There's probably like, I know Anduin was like shooting people in the eyes when he was like 12. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if they'll ever do it, and there really currently isn't any in-game lore for pretty much any of the holidays that are currently there.
Tyr starts preferring to go to visit the orcs because they're, like, thrilled when he starts handing out weapons.
It's just matches their orc sensibilities.
Yeah, well, although they get mad when he hands out swords, so he has to switch to axes. Like, no one wants to use this. Why not? It's a perfectly effective killing tool. Orc.
What if we make it bigger? Well, I guess okay. But I think we're going to move on to the next one. This one comes from Ishtel. Question for Lorewatch. What's up with the Light Mother referenced in the Makkar recruitment scenario? Is that the Zera we saw Illidan delete, restored from the Light Realm? Is it an alternate Zera, or is it something else entirely? Our current knowledge is that the Twisting Nether is an anchor point across all realities, so if demons are able to traverse the Twisting Nether between our two realities, what is to stop another entity such as the Prime Naru, an army of the Light, from doing the same thing? So when we see the Lightbound using light-forged warframes, is that pure coincidence? Or could there be a deeper connection, example, Zera starting fresh with an Exarch who doesn't have Velen as a voice of reason? And if there is, what happens if when our Army of Light comes face-to-face with the second edition?
Well, we don't know the answer to your question. It would seem possible, because keep in mind, up until about 30 years ago, around the time of Warcraft 1, the two timelines are very similar. They're not the same. Like, for example, Grom's wife dies before she has a child in the Warlords of Draenor timeline. And obviously, Nerzul's wife doesn't die, which she had by the time we see, you know, before Warcraft 1, in the Lord of the Clans type stuff, we see that, you know, in the timeline, original timeline, our timeline, we could call it, Nerzul's wife had already died. And, like, one of the reasons that he's tricked into serving the Legion is because they come to him in the form of his dead wife. Obviously, she's still alive when we go to the alternate Draenor. So there are differences, but it's still pretty much the same. The history is close. I can't remember his name, but the guy who helped make the Sands of Time thing in the first place. The one that Garrosh kills.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember, but I know who you're talking about, yeah.
He even says it's like blades of grass. Not every blade of grass is identical, but most of them are the same. You know, and it's similar to that. So it's quite possible that it's Zera, or it's possible that in this world, somebody other than Zera was the Prime Naru, and that Light Mother is that Naru, because for whatever reason, they're the ones that ended up taking over the Army of Light. We don't know. We know that it was close enough that there was a Velen there. It was close enough that the basic story of the Draenei was the same. So it could be Zera. It might be somebody else. We don't know if Zera, it counts like the way demons did. We know there's a question in this email that we will probably get to later that might also have relevance in this situation. So I can't really speak much more to that. I mean, we don't really know. We just do not know. Who it is or how they got there. If it's an alternate Zera, if it's the same Zera who, you know, would have technically been killed by Illidan before we go to recruit the Makkar, we don't know.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, I think it's left up for speculation purposely, because it is after dealing with Zera and dealing with everything that happened in Legion and all of the stuff with the Army of the Light. And sort of like us just coming to terms with it and then kind of getting this unexpected evolution, right? So when you go to do the Makkar Orc recruitment scenario, it's not something you expect to see. You don't expect to go back to Draenor, our alternate universe Draenor, and expect it to be completely ravaged again, but this time by the Light, which is a foreign concept to almost anything we've experienced at this point. We know that the Light can be strict. We saw that it could try to be willful and or imposing its will onto others with Zera, which was a very shocking moment for a lot of people. And then you have this scenario where you go and you see this army of Light fanatics are recruiting or killing everything on the planet. It's a shocking moment, and I think it's meant to shock. And when they refer
also, to, I'm going to be upfront, man. We do not see that they are killing everyone on the planet.
Fair enough. We are told they are.
Yeah, we're told that by orcs, who, you know, are the guys who literally spent, you know, previously 30 years ago are the ones who decided they were going to conquer the whole planet and kill everybody.
Sure.
I'm willing to say that until such time as we actually see this, you know, light bound group doing these things, I'm willing to take it with a grain of salt. I'm telling
but
you,
I'm pretty sure in the scenario we did when the army shows up and they're like, you will join or you will be made to heal.
Yeah, because at this point, as they themselves say, you've done this to this planet. They flat out blame the orcs for what's happening.
Oh, no, but that's we talked about this before, though. That's the impetus for this movement, right?
It's the impetus for this specific moment.
It's not wrong.
We don't know what's happening, is what I'm getting at.
Sure.
And it's the thing about the Zira situation, and it's the thing about the Lightbound. It could be exactly as you're saying. It could be exactly that. We don't know.
Hell, it could be a Dreadlord in disguise as the Lightmother.
Could be, or maybe it's, you know, maybe Yrel is just crazy. I mean, we don't know. I would be really mad if they did that. But
I would also be very mad if they did that.
The problem is that, you know, until such time as we get, like, a lot of times with WoW, stuff gets introduced and then we don't see the payoff for it forever.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes so long to get the payoff that you almost don't want it anymore. Like, I kind of feel like the end of Battle for Azeroth with the whole thing with N'Zoth felt sort of, like, pushed in. Like, oh, okay, this could have been an entire expansion instead of half of one. So, I don't know. I would like to see more with the Magcar. I'd like to see more with the Lightbound. I absolutely would.
And to answer the second part of your series of questions here, Ishtel, we talked about this a little bit before with what we thought would happen if that particular army came through. We did an entire episode on what would happen if it was an expansion of fighting the Light. We covered a bit about it, but I think it would be a very fascinating thing if that version of those Light forces, who very clearly, I mean, if they're Draenei and they're living in you know, AU Draenor, they have access to a lot of the same crystal technology, if not the same crystal technology, that our Draenei use to transverse multidimensional space. So it's only a matter of time before they traverse multidimensional space. It's just, to me, logically speaking, it's going to happen. Like, how would they be received? What would happen? And I think it would come, we talked about this a little bit before, but just to kind of go back over a little bit, I think they would be received well at first because, hey, here are Warriors of the Light, you know, and I think people in Azeroth would have much the same reaction that Matt has, which is, okay, the Makkar orcs and the champion are saying, we saw them do some weird things, and the champion's like, well, yeah, but I mean, I can't say that I saw everything that they told me happened, you know? So you have one group of orcs that are now settled on Azeroth's word against an entire expansion where you worked with these people, right? An entire expansion where both factions were, you know, cognizant of Yrel, cognizant of her forces. You literally, one of the first things you do, no matter what faction you are, when you started Warlords of Draenor, is you broke out of essentially Gorian prison and that whole arena scenario. And who was there with you in the mines? Yrel was there. So now, who do you believe? And I think it comes with a grain of salt, where like Matt said, where they're like, yeah, well, we remember fighting with them. We fought demons with them. We purged a whole bunch of this stuff with them. They're on the good side, right? They'd be accepted warmly, and then eventually, whoever we'd find out who the Light Mother is, the Light Mother would make a reference or make an appearance, and it would turn out to be somebody that we didn't expect it to be, or possibly not even a good force, or maybe it would. Maybe it would be another version of Inaru. Maybe it would be Zera. Maybe it would be something else. And then we start to realize, oh, maybe things aren't as good as we want them to be. They become a little too strict. They become a little too controversial about like their purity or whatever the case is, and then it kind of snowballs from there. So I don't know that our armies would come face to face in a headbutt scenario immediately, and I think that's part of the interesting thing with this particular faction, is it's not a perceived threat immediately, and there's enough shadow of a doubt to keep it from being a perceived threat immediately. Because even at the end of the day, if you, the champion, are saying, yeah, I saw them attack these orcs, you're still one voice. When we were on Draenor, Thrall was there. He saw a bunch of the stuff. He saw Yrel. Jaina was there. All these people, like, there were forces that were there that interacted with them. Why would they assume that what we're saying is absolutely 100%, you know, gospel on it, even if you are the champion? So,
I mean, that implies that they would, for that matter, reach out to the Horde at all, which they might not.
Which they might not, too. Right. You speculate, if you want to go into just a little bit, that they would appear to the Alliance, right?
You show up and you immediately, like, reach out to Velen. You know, you have Yrel come down and be like, Velen. And, you know, maybe he wouldn't know anything about, like, he didn't go over there, so he would, maybe there's no Urel in our timeline and he never met her, but he would probably respond favorably to a bright-eyed young Draenei who's obviously powerful in the light and who said she was coming to help save the world or something.
And it's carrying the same sigil that he is, right? Like, he gave.
She's got the Velen sigil on her forehead. You know, she got it at the end of Shadow Moon. So yeah, it's possible. I mean, there's a lot of different ways it could go, depending entirely on how you wanted to do it. If you wanted to like portray them as just zealots and fanatics, that is one way you can do it. You can absolutely go that way. Or you could try and play around with the idea of we were killing the Maghar, but look at what the Maghar did. You know. There's a lot of ways around it. There's a lot of ways you could play with it. But we don't, like, the problem is that with a lot of stuff, this is all speculation based on a few things. We have only that scenario to tell us what happened on that Draenor. And as far as I know, that they might not even be out there to come here because they might be dead. Because they certainly seem to be implying that that world got destroyed.
Or was in the process of it.
Yeah, so we don't know if we'll ever see them again. I would like it because I miss Urel and I would like to see her again. I would be really disappointed if Urel had been turned into a cartoon villain or a dupe. But it would be kind of interesting if Urel, you know, the same kind-hearted, you know, noble, good person is doing these things, not because, you know, I'm a cackling evil now, but you know, and not because, you know, the ends justify the means, but because they sincerely believe, yes, this stuff is harsh, but it's much better than what will happen if I don't do it. Like, you know, I'm doing this now and yeah, I regret it, but the alternative is death and I'm not willing to accept that. So there's a lot of ways it could go.
Yep. All right. But we're going to move on to our next one. And this one comes from Zed. Question for Lorewatch. Hello. Given some of the Shadowlands themes of duality of the soul, Uther, Sylvanas, Zilval, etc., do you think that Charlemagne's party trick of splitting in half could be used to help resolve the situation with Anduin by effectively giving an avenue to remove the trap, the domination magic, one half of the sword? Before I let the mat loose on this one, Charlemagne is the combination of two swords. Not necessarily the two swords are the split form of Charlemagne. And they were formed together when Varian was fused back together. They were individual swords before that point. But Matt,
Shalator and Elemane.
Yep. But what do you think, Matt?
I mean, could that happen? Sure. Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, will it happen? I don't know. But yeah, what's interesting about this is that Joe just kind of alluded to it. When Charlemagne is the combined form of two blades.
Two legendary weapons.
Yeah, two legendary weapons that were created by the Night Elves. Think of this as similar to, like, there were high blades, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Much like you have, you know, Quel'Dalar and
Quel'Salar.
Quel'Salar, which I should have remembered because I got the thing back in the day. Jeez, Matt. But, you know, they were effectively that kind of weapon. Not specifically named Quel. But that's like, Quel'Salar and Quel'Dalar are kind of generic names for these weapons. Quel'Salar and Quel'Dalar basically mean high blade in their respective languages. Whereas Shalator and Elemane, I think they were a step above that. It's like there are more than one Quel'Salar, more than one Quel'Dalar. There were multiples of these things at one point in time. But Shalator or Elemane were unique.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Flamestrike, Felomalorn is unique. So in a way, they're artifacts versus legendaries. Quel'Dalar and Quel'Salar are legendaries. They're very important, very powerful, but not as unique. In game terms, weapons like Ashkandi and Shadowmourne or Frostmourne would be that kind of weapon. They're a specific named one of a kind item. It gets muddy because, you know, game rules and so forth. But when Varian was split by Onyxia, she did it because she wanted all of the character traits that Varian possessed that she didn't want around to die. She was literally going to kill that half of him.
His compassion, his nobility, the part that made him more human and a good king.
Well, she wanted his ability to fight back against her.
Mm.
That's the stuff she was going for. His anger over the death of his family, you know, his wife, his parents, his feeling of inability to get revenge, his rage, the stuff that made him Lagash when he was found and became a gladiator. That that aspect of him, the trained from a very young age warrior, the one who'd lost everything, the one who was, you know, angry at the injustice of everything, that Varian she wanted dead, because she wanted the good, kind, you know, compassionate, and more importantly, charismatic and good at diplomacy version of Varian. She wanted that guy around as long as she knew she could keep him under her thumb. And so that's why she split him. But unfortunately for her, they didn't split as cleanly as you would want. I actually read the comics and liked them at the time. I didn't realize, you know, where they were going to end up going, but I actually liked the Varian story in the comics because the ruthless gladiator Lagash was still good at organizing people and getting them to listen to him. He organized his gladiator team and got them to escape the gladiator rings together. They followed him halfway across the world. He was still a charismatic leader, and the supposedly, you know, passionless, easily manipulated version of Varian still was pretty good with a sword and still stood up to fight for his son.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't split them as well as she thought she had. But when they were recombined, after Jaina had given each of them one of these two legendary swords that she had, when they were recombined, their two swords became one sword. So in a way, it wouldn't really, it wouldn't work the same way, because Anduin wasn't two people split into, you know, split from an original one, then recombined back. And so it would be like doing the Onyxia thing to him. If you could split the swords and split the person at the same time. When we see the swords get split sense, when we see both Varian and Sarafang do it, neither of them is long for the world at that point.
Yep.
And I don't think that's anything to do with the swords. I just think it's just a coincidence. But if Anduin does it, and I don't know if Anduin does do it at any point, but if he does do it, I don't think it will split him.
We do know that he was able to bring them back together. Like,
yeah,
because that was one of the things. He had one half of the sword, and he had his agents go find the other half after his father died, and he was able to pull them back together into Shalom. So we know that he has the capability of doing that, at least. But we've never seen him split. So
yeah, fair enough.
One of the things that I want to point out here, though, too, is there's an X factor that we honestly don't know enough about. We have some guesses and we have some speculation, and we'll cover a little bit about. But it's Charlemagne has been technically reforged. It has been made into a Mournblade. It is now named Kingsmorn. It has been altered in some capacity by the smiths of the jailer. There is a soul fused into it, which we think, or at least I think, could potentially be the soul of one wonderful, was a naive king of men, not Varian. I'm talking about Arthas, who we haven't seen since he was thrown into the Maw. We don't know what happened to him. It seems pretty likely that that would be a really good way to use his soul to make a Mournblade, and then to use it to give to his vessel that he wanted originally the Lich King to be, which failed. So use it again to help drive the vessel. Why not? But we don't know what that does to the sword. We don't know if the sword can still split. We don't know if it is still Shelator and Elamain combined, or what happened when that process was undergone. We don't know what the process is of making a Mournblade. The Primus seems to know and hasn't told us anything about it, which is just rude, let's be honest. But that's an X factor. Can the swords even still be split? Is it even still the same sword? I posit that it's not. Not until we either find a way to rip whatever souls inside of it out, or find a way to reverse the Mournblade process. The other side of the coin is, let's say that it could split. What happens? Technically, there are two souls resident within between the body and the sword now. Does one give given form when it splits? Do we see a perfectly obedient Arthas soul given form when the swords are split, because it is likely the soul that is used to empower the King's Mourn Blade? We don't know. So I don't think that if the swords can split, that it will fix Anduin. It might just cause more problems. We also, again, just to reiterate, don't know if it can even still be split. Anything else, Matt?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Our next question comes from Swagsy. For Lorewatch, I was thinking about the different timelines, Shadowlands, and the rope analogy given to explain it all. The more I think about the rope and how Anima works, it makes a lot of sense. Is it possible that as alternate timeline people die, their Anima simply goes back to the core timeline person? We see in Shadowlands that the afterlife isn't too concerned with people retaining their original memories anyways, Bastion. So this could fit with the rope analogy given to us. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
No, you talk first.
My show, you talk first.
Okay, I don't have any opinion. Go.
Possibly. So one of the things about the rope analogy was it was used really to describe the creation of alternate timelines and alternate pocket dimensions. And not necessarily pocket dimensions, so to speak, but splits from the main timeline that start an alternate timeline that eventually either fray off into nothingness or get absorbed back into the main timeline. This was before Anima was ever discussed. This is before.
Hold on. Now you see, this is why I wanted you to talk first. I think he's talking about Steven User's specific explanation for how you could have, like, for instance, two Goldons.
Yeah.
But not see two Goldons in the Shadowlands. Or how you know, there's Draka doing Draka stuff, but she doesn't remember and doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Draka we met in Warlords of Draenor. How come there's not two Drakas? Because I think that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's what they're talking
and
about.
And that theory was specifically floated by Steve Denuser to talk about Shadowlands, and he did mention Anima in it, and that the Anima was really? The same. Yeah, absolutely. It was the Anima is the same. It's the same being.
Well, please continue then.
That I'm just clarifying the point because you just said it wasn't mentioned for that, and it was. There's been earlier talks about the Braid Theory in relation to the way time ways work, but that's not specifically what it was being used to talk about here, I don't think. The problem that I have with it, the problem I've always had with it, is it's not defined. Like, what do you mean by that? You know, does it mean that there's only like one soul between these multiple different variations, even if they do completely different things? Like, if there's a time way where Arthas is like a good and noble king fighting to defend his people and never goes Death Knight and never does, you know, does that guy still doom to the Maw? Yes, that guy is still doomed to the Maw. If one version of you does something awful, but that version happens to be in the main timeline, the rest of you doesn't matter how good you are. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like it is the message that's being sent here. So that's something I've always wanted clarification on. Yeah. But I don't think that my thoughts here are actually useful to this question. A lot of these questions are really speculative, which is great. We like speculation, but it's very hard to like give you an answer other than that could be the case. You know what I mean? And in the case of this one, it's really hard for me because I honestly don't, I've never really bought the idea that, you know, there's just this one Draka in the afterlife, even though I've spoken to two different Drakas now. Like, I talked to a different Draka when I was leveling Horde through Warlords of Draenor. You know what I mean? Like, we have conversations with her. She gives you quests. How can she be this Draka if this Draka doesn't know me? Do you see where I'm going with this?
I get what
this person's saying, that, you know, hey, you know, you lose your memories in the Shadowlands anyway, so it would make sense that you wouldn't remember all the different alternate timelines. So maybe that's accurate. Maybe that's valid. I don't know.
Well, no, they're saying that you get to keep your memory, so why don't they remember that if everything gets pulled?
That's not what he's saying. I mean, if you look at the question that he's asking, the way he phrases it, specifically he says, I'm gonna read this. I have to find it.
We
see that in the Shadowlands that the afterlife isn't too concerned with people retaining their original memories anyways, mm-hmm. Bastion, so this could fit with the rope analogy given to us. So in other words, since they don't have those memories because no one cares whether or not you have those memories anyway.
We took it two different ways. It was same, yeah. Which are not necessarily a bad, but yeah. Okay.
Well, the way that this is phrased, we see in the Shadowlands that the afterlife isn't too concerned with people retaining their original memories. So if it doesn't matter, like, you know, the Draka we could be talking to might not actually have the memories of the Draka from our timeline,
because
it wouldn't matter. They wouldn't care. As long as they got her soul, they wouldn't care if all of her memories lined up.
Right. But the question, I guess the idea of it, though, and I'm just thinking about this from the context of the stories and the context of the Covenant stuff, the memories of the people, like even in Bastion where their memories are stripped, they're saved. They're in the mirrors. They're cataloged away. Right. In Revendreth, the Sin Stones exist with the compiled, like, horribleness that a person did. Like, it's their greatest tragedy that they ever,
committed. Even in Revendreth, when they have their like, you know, various stuff purged from them, they don't forget anything.
Right. And I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm just saying though, but from that side of the coin, then technically only Bastion was removing memories. So if you, at least from what we were shown,
But his question isn't necessarily about whether or not memories are removed. His question is, do they actually care if someone retains their original memories? Like, we see in Shadowlands that the afterlife isn't too concerned with people retaining their original memories. Uh-huh. I don't know that we can argue one way or the other on that point. Can I argue that they are concerned with people retaining their original memories? No. I don't think that in the Shadowlands they worry so much as, is this soul...
But then going back to the first part of the question, though, which is what I'm trying to get at here and trying to work towards, is then what happens to those memories when everything gets pulled back into one anima source, if everything comes back to the original?
There is nothing in this question asks what happens to those memories. Memory isn't the issue here. Because memory is not important to the Shadowlands. I think he's dead on that. I don't think that, I think literally the afterlife isn't too concerned with people retaining their original memories. That is never, none of the Covenants cares about your original memories.
Sure.
Because they're not souls to the afterlife here. Souls to the Shadowlands are not individuals. They're not people. They're material. They're fuel. They're the raw components of something else.
Is that still the case, though, with the ones that are reborn in the service of the Covenants, though? Like in Ardenwell, they make it... Go ahead.
No, I'm still going here. Look at what happens in Bastion. That's the first one. But we've already covered, we know what happens in Bastion. They for a long time, pared away the soul. But look at Ardenweald. Your identity is a product of everything you've been through in your life, and you get to keep your memory, but you don't get to keep your self-conception.
Unless you're
Ysir. Unless you're Ysir, you become something else. You get a new form. You go to Revendreth and you get to keep your memories, but you don't get to keep your opinion of your own worth. You don't get to judge what you did for yourself. Your sins are what they're concerned about. That's what the people in Revendreth focus on. The people in Ardenweald focus on your value to the cycle of rebirth. In a very real way, you become a component in the cycle of rebirth. You become part of it. You tend it. And it's not about you. It's about that cycle of rebirth. In Bastion, it's not about you. It's about service. It's about ferrying souls. Mm-hmm. And if you go to Meldraxxus, you know, Draka keeps Draka, but she's put in the House of Eyes and told to be a spy. She was never a spy in her life. Who she was is not of concern to them. What she has displayed the potential for is, what can she do for Maldraxxus? I think that the big story of Shadowlands behind the surface, underneath the covers here, has been all about the afterlife and the beings that run it, learning that identity and personal experience and existence is worth something besides its material component, besides its means of production nature. It's not just about, you know, how the anima is channeled back into the cycle of rebirth. It's not just about where souls end up. It's about who they are. But that's not the way the Shadowlands has been treating them up to this point. So the rope thing about how can you have two different lives feed into this one braid? You can have two different lives feed into that braid very easily when you don't care about either of them. And it's, in a way, it does make sense that the Draka we meet, she could be either Draka. She could be both Drakas because they don't stop to care. And so it's all about, we do see that she remembers Thrall.
She does. She knows who he is.
And she remembers, and not just that, she remembers things that he did as a child. Mm-hmm. The Draka we met would not have those memories because she would have only had a daughter.
So here's the disconnect for me with Shadowlands in general when it comes to memory, right? And this is where this is a weird point of discussion, and this is where I kind of wanted to go with this, is they make a big deal that there's this esoteric concept of self, right? That's sort of like like you're pointing out, that's sort of like the thing for Shadowlands. But memory is still there. And the question is, what is memory? And it's, we know that they give it up in Bastion, that they give away the self-evaluation in Revendreth, but what is memory to a person's being then? What is memory to that soul?
Also, what is memory to someone who will exist unchanged for a timeless eon?
Right. Well,
what is memory? And look at this. There's another way to put it. Memory is clearly very important to Zoval, because Zoval is nothing but rage over what has happened to them.
Yep.
Being angry over something that happened to you is a function of memory. You can't have revenge if you don't remember what you're mad about.
Right. But so here's the part that I always, this is the part with the braid theory and everything else that I've always had a hard time reconciling from aspect of an individual, right? So we'll use the Gul'dan, where we're told they're both Gul'dan. They're both actually Gul'dan. But when one died, the other didn't gain any memories. The other didn't have any knowledge of anything that happened from the other one. So they exist individualistically most, even though they're tied to the same point. So at that point, with say both of them die and they both go to the Shadowlands, or more accurately, probably consumed by Fel, but we'll say they wind up in the Shadowlands. Is it a point where one of them claims dominance, overriding the other ones, or do both memories exist? And that's the part I've never been able to reconcile, right?
We've had that discussion before, and we have never reconciled it. And here, my whole argument in this is quite simply that it doesn't matter for the purposes of the Shadowlands, right? The Shadowlands doesn't care. Yeah. So what if the reason that this never comes up is because when the Shadowlands is recombining those essences into a being, they literally just pick one.
But the interesting thing too with that thing is
you know, because they're recombining the anima together, right?
Yeah.
And we already know with timelines, if you have a time wave that splits off and weird stuff that's not even remotely close happens in that time wave, but then later on it's reabsorbed, it still follows the dominant channel. It doesn't follow that alternate time wave. We know that. We saw that in the War of the Ancients books.
Mm-hmm.
History didn't change, even though history changed. Like the Alliance was still the way the Alliance was, but now there's this whole story of Ronan and Calic, not Caligos. I keep wanting to say Caligos, but I mean Coriolanus, Coriolanus, Crassus. Wow, man, I hate that he has so many names. But they now suddenly they're written onto the past.
Mm-hmm.
The past has been changed slightly. The present has not. Does that happen with the memories? Like, do some of Gul'dan's memories change to be closer to the alternate Gul'dan?
And maybe it's because of the function of something I'm reading right now in regular real world that is dealing with a lot of these concepts that I've been thinking about this a lot more recently in general, is how that works, because it's almost like it's slight nudges, right? Like I'm almost wondering if that's what happens, like you're saying.
Or here's another thing to think about. Technically speaking, the Gul'dan that we're more familiar with died earlier than the Gul'dan that came around in Legion, the one that from the Warlords of Draenor world. But the one from the Warlords of Draenor world was about the same age.
Yeah.
So he might have actually been older by the time he died after the first one. Does he technically count as the prime Gul'dan because he died later?
That's what I was thinking. Like how does that work?
And
he was pulled to the prime plane.
Now, here's another one for you. We just got done talking about how Thrall doesn't have an analog from that world. There's no Thrall in that world. There's a sister who is not a sister because she doesn't have a brother and he didn't have a sister, but they have the same parents.
Functionally in the way that we reconcile it internally, weird sister.
But is it, in fact, if Thrall died tomorrow and she kept living for another 50 years and then died, would their two spirits commingle? Is their anima the same? Are they like braided together?
It's one of the things that is always so difficult with like dealing with probability theory and dealing with like multiverse and things like that, because a lot of this stuff is all of it's being made up, right? Like it's all.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it's one of those things where trying to have it make sense in an easily digestible way without having a long debate about it is very difficult.
Well, I mean, it's the debate part is because people debate things. But in terms of having it make sense, it's very easy for it to make sense if you can make the crucial concession that I don't think many people want to make. And that concession is that it makes perfect sense, just not in a linear order. Like, the whole idea of time travel works fine if you're willing to accept that people can move laterally through time.
Sure.
They can move in directions other than straightforward. Cause and effect only works in a causalistic universe, one where effects have to be following causes. But if you work in a four-dimensional, then suddenly that doesn't matter anymore. It's not important. This whole thing, where this discussion, which has baffled the two of us for how long has this expansion been out now? About a year.
Year and a half, 2 years. Almost.
Yeah, not 2 years. Because it was like November or something of last year.
Yeah, I think
year.
It's What's a year. It? Yeah.
Yeah, but regardless, October of last year.
November 23rd, 2020.
Okay, so yeah, the October would have been the pre-batch. So basically, what we're looking at here is, in a three-dimensional linear sense, is completely incomprehensible. It does not make sense. You can't have these completely different lives, and yet one of them comes out, and like I said before, you have murderer Arthas and good guy Arthas who saves kittens, but good guy Arthas is going to hell with murderer Arthas. Because you think those are two different people. But if they're not two different people, then one universe, if we go with the idea that one universe is the real universe and all these other time ways and so forth are just eddies, they're just ripples, they're not real, they don't have the same primality. Perhaps it's the Shadowlands that causes this.
Because the Shadowlands literally has an engine that can create an infinite number of existences, right?
Yeah, and maybe it's because the Shadowlands pulls everybody's quote-unquote anima to it. When they die, they go to the Shadowlands, and they become what's mined for. So it creates this singular timeline because it won't allow one Gul'dan to exist alongside the other Gul'dan. It braids them, and maybe it chooses the one that is best suited to fitting what it's trying to do. This is just one possible theory, but this would explain why you can have Draka, who basically knows and understands the story of Thrall and doesn't seem to have had a girl at any point.
So another question then too, is we've also seen that souls can be split. And
yeah, we have. Maybe that, and think about what that means in a universe where souls can also be a braided rope.
Yeah. So what happens then? Then the question then also on the table, I'm not going to say then becomes, but I think that's also part of this conversation, is does it just get pruned off and put somewhere? Does it get pruned off and consumed? Does it get pruned off and shoved into its own pocket, whatever? So maybe. Well,
clearly, at least some of the time,
it gets pruned off
and kept.
Because I was going to say, hold on a second. What if, and this is just a wild what if, you're talking about good guy Arthas, bad guy Arthas. What if there's a good guy Arthas universe out there and a bad guy Arthas, but bad guy Arthas is the one that's useful for the Shadowlands? He's the one that is the engine that they need for whatever anima that they're using. So they decide to keep him, but instead of, they shove good guy Arthas into its own pocket afterlife where it can't affect anything else and doesn't get braided back in because they need the angst. They need that self-doubt. They need that power of that to fuel the engine. Do we think that maybe stuff like that happens?
I don't know, because that implies that, angst is just inherently more powerful than being good. And I think Mr. Rogers disproves that.
I would agree, but I'm just throwing it out there.
But in terms of what happens with split souls, like I said, we see that the jailer has a whole collection of souls that he, got, that he pulled out of the maw and kept, or wherever he got them from. Are some of them fragments? Maybe he makes fragments all the time. Maybe he's constantly pairing off chunks of people to study them, to look at what those elements of that person are like.
Look at the amalgamations in the maw. A lot of them are just chunks of souls fused together, braided together.
And so the entire nature of what a soul is and what it does in the Shadowlands should be really disquieting, because it's one thing to see necromancy practiced on corpses, like a dead body and another dead body.
Yeah, the Forsaken and Death Knights and stuff like that. That's one thing. That's horrible, but it's one thing.
To see souls used in this way, to see souls hammered flat and turned into machines, because those big constructs are made out of souls.
Look at the soul cages. Soul cages are my favorite example of that. They're literally gigantic suits of metallic armor. They don't even have hands or legs. They're just souls strapped together and duct taped into a machine.
Yeah. And every single one of those things, when you can do stuff like split souls up, you can do stuff like braid souls together. Souls, lose the thing that we think of as being the most important thing about them, that they are your immortal essence, that they are you transcending life and death. Mm-hmm. And to these people, they're just coal or lumps of iron to be used as they see fit. That's the terrifying thing to think about here. And it ties back into this concept of the braided soul and the people from multiple time ways. It's possible the reason that there's only one true time way is because the Shadowlands won't let anything else exist. Like, and it pulls from all time ways. So if you die in a time way, eventually it's going to jam you into the other souls, no matter how big or powerful they are. And everything that makes you an individual with your own life choices and decisions will be lost to the greater consensus. Maybe if like there's 5 billion Drakas and 4 billion of them all basically had the same life, the other billion gets snuffed out. You don't get to hear about their lives because they don't fit the pattern. That is in fact one possibility. We don't know, but it is worth thinking about in the regards of this question. And it's why I think memory I've been trying to say from the beginning is that memory is the casualty of this approach, because memory is actually you. You know, memory is how you know you are who you are.
Yeah, you're the like Illidan said, you're the sum of, like, I am my scars, right?
Yeah, you are the sum total.
You're the sum total, yep.
And if they don't put, like, if you don't become, like, if Draka doesn't get to have the memories of every Draka, but only gets to have the memories of the Draka that fits the consensus, that in one way or another serves the Shadowlands' purposes, then Draka is diminished. We're all diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And look, thinking that what they do, the Revendreth from the beginning, the first time I heard about Revendreth, I thought to myself, wait a minute, how is it that they can have the old faithfuls who can constantly provide anima? They never run out. They don't run out as long as they're not willing to accept that they should be ashamed, that they should feel, you know, shame at their sins, that they should relinquish those sins. As long as they clutch who they are, their anima is limitless. How is that? Why is that? Why is it that Garrosh could be like an infinite power supply?
Or Kael'thas,
or any of them. As long as they won't let go.
And
they're holding on. And yeah, go ahead. I was going to say,
just look at that too. Like, you know, our conceptualization of that is not accurate, right? Because like now you have Kael'thas running around helping us against the Jailer. So here's Kael'thas, who is one of these old faithfuls that we're told will never repent for his sins, won't ever take ownership of what he does. And yet here he is, complete in his essence, standing there acknowledging what he did, saying, I will do it all again, and is just as powerful and just as larger than life as you could expect. But he's not a bomb. He's not blowing up. He's not an agent of destruction, and he is kind of on a leash a little bit. But like, one of my favorite things in the recent like patches was his conversation with Lady Vash, when you're going around and doing the things with them, and he's flat out, you know, just saying, you know, I am who I am, and that's all it's ever going to be. And is it just because he's an immutable soul that he was an one that would give forever? He wouldn't accept a change because he, again, like Illidan, is the sum of his scars, accepts what he did, would do it again. Is that why Garrosh was the same thing? Because Garrosh was very much in that same camp. I did what I did because it was what I knew needed to be done for what was given to me. Whether or not we view it as right, he did. And so he's another immutable soul. Is that what becomes an old faithful? Is it just a soul that won't change, will not accept a paring down?
Maybe. Maybe it's like a diamond. You know, put enough soul under enough pressure, enough heat, you know, it becomes a diamond, and then you can facet it very carefully, but you can't really, you know, it's much harder than a chunk of coal.
Yeah, and cutting it. Yeah, you can't cut the diamond as easily. Yeah, I get you.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But it is interesting to think about in this conversation about that whole concept of braiding. Like, what does that braiding mean? What forms does it take? What does it have to do with memory or the other intangible aspects of self? Because self is the thing that we're really coming around on here. Look at Sylvanas' story. Mm-hmm. She got a piece of herself given back. Now she is more herself. We saw that with Uther. Uther had a piece of himself torn away, and now it's back. The whole domination magic seems to be about destruction of the self, dominating
Subjugation, the self. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's all going to play into the post Shadowlands experience, what Shadowlands will end about, like the end of this expansion, what does it mean? Is this idea of this is an afterlife, not just, we're not just here to be fuel for this cosmic engine of death, where, you know, this is our afterlife and it needs to be about us. In a way, it's a really interesting anti-capitalist manifesto, although that could just be current times affecting my worldview.
Entirely possible, or current times, or we'll say the last, you know, myriad. Yeah. But I think that's going to do it for today. I think we can call it there. Again, if you do have questions for this podcast or the other one, or any of our podcasts, be sure to send them in to us, podcast@blizzardwatch.com, and you can go ahead and submit them on our Discord channel. Matt, can you go ahead and take us out today?
Sure thing. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. All of us here at Blizzard Watch, of course, stand with the employees of Activision Blizzard and demanding change and a better tomorrow for the workers. Thank you guys so much for being here. Joe and I are both like raw-throated right now, so you know it's been a lot of talking this weekend. We're really glad you're here with us, though. Thank you for being at Lore Watch, and come on back next week. We'll do another one.
Bye, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.